Thank you very much. One of the most popular hypotheses on the origin of relativistic astrophysical jets is that they are produced by the black holes. Namely that they are simply continuations of magnetically dominated magnetospheres of black holes. And they're powered by the rotational energy of the black holes. And it's done by means of magnetic fields. And in my talk, I will present numerical simulations of black hole magnetospheres, where the main question, the main subject of investigation will be the nature of mechanisms of extraction of rotational energy of black holes. How do they work? Whether do they work? And if they work, then why? Right. In my talk, I will use a gamma, alpha, beta, gamma representation of the space-time metric, the standard representation now, where gamma is a metric tensor of the space, with spatial coordinates xi and global time coordinate t, and alpha and beta, well, they describe the fiducial observer who can be described as an observer who is at rest in this space. And as you can see, alpha basically gives you the rate of standard clocks of this observer relative to the global time. And beta describes or gives you the free velocity of the spatial grid relative to this fiducial observer. Okay, and well, we'll be dealing with Kerr black holes, and they allow such coordinates, t, phi, r, and theta, that all components of the metric tensor do not depend on phi and do not depend on t. Two examples are Boyle-Lindquist coordinates and the Kerr-Schill coordinates. Right. Many of the original papers on the black hole electrodynamics dealt directly with the tensor equations of electrodynamics of black holes, and as a result, the papers were not easy reading for an astrophysicist with average mathematical abilities, like your speaker, for example. Fortunately, when we split space-time in space and time, these equations can be written in terms of free vectors, vectors of normal space, and in the form which is looks very much familiar. In fact, they can be written in exactly the same form as Maxwell equations in matter. And following, well, this notation, well, I will try to stick to the standard names for these vectors, like the magnetic induction, electric field, electric displacement, and magnetic field. But sometimes I can mix them, so please forgive me. Right. Now, these equations are constitutive equations. This tells us how these vectors relate to each other. And you can see that alpha and beta, well, these components of the metric tensor, these quantities which represent the metric of space-time, are present here. And so in the metric, even the empty space around the black hole, in fact, behaves as a magnetically active medium. And here I'll show how nice and simple many other results look like when you stick to this notation. For example, you immediately get from those Maxwell-type equations the electric charge conservation law. And here you can have all the energy conservation law, where E is the energy density of the electromagnetic field. Sometimes it's called the energy density at infinity. Right, and S is a pointing vector. Right here, a similarly simple looking equation for the angular momentum conservation, where L is again, well, the volume density of the angular momentum at infinity, and L is the flux density of the angular momentum vector. And you can also introduce the electric potential and the vector potential in exactly the same form as in classical electrodynamics. Right, now it makes sense to describe how these vectors, which I just introduced, relate to what these fiducial observers measure, really. All right, for example, and these quantities will be indicated by hats. Right? So you can see that magnetic field is exactly the same, right? But the electric field they measure is, in fact, the same as the electric displacement vector in my notation. Right? The electric charge density is the same, and the electric current density is given by a slightly different expression. Okay. Finally, far away from the black hole, where alpha becomes unity and beta vanishes, B hat, B and H exactly coincide, and E hat, E and D exactly coincide, and E and J hat coincides with J. What? Feeder? Feeder, oh, feeder, yeah, okay. So feeder is an abbreviation for the fiducial observer, right? Well, that artificial observer who is sitting in a trust relative to the space. Okay. Right. Now I'll continue and to play with this new equations and show you how easily one can derive some other important results. For example, if you assume that there is steady state and there's no currents in the black hole magnetosphere, once again, it's steady state axisymmetric magnetospheres, right? And it's a vacuum case, right? So steady state, no currents, we have these two equations, and from these two equations and the assumption of axisymmetry, immediately find that H phi and E phi must be zero. And then if you look at the pointing vector and the angular momentum vector, the flux vector, you will see that everywhere in these expressions you have either E phi or H phi. And since they vanish, you can have no extraction of energy from a black hole, no extraction of angular momentum, if you have such steady state axisymmetric vacuum magnetosphere. Right. Now, let's jump to the case where you have plasma, which is plays no important role as far as its inertia is concerned, but which provides high conductivity. So we are dealing essentially with force-free magnetospheres. What do we have in this case? Now we have electric current density here, right? And therefore H phi is no longer zero. It relates to the total electric current within corresponding magnetic flux tube, right? From the condition of steady state and axisymmetry, you still get that E phi is zero. Now here we have the force-free equation, and from this equation you immediately find that E dot B is zero. And these two conditions tell you that electric field is basically perpendicular, is purely poloidal, perpendicular to the magnetic field. And this is written here, right? The M is a rho vector along the phi coordinate. Right. Now, if you play a little bit more with those equations, you end up with those results, which also look very similar. They tell you that the angular velocity of magnetic field lines, omega, the electrostatic potential, and the H phi, they're all constants along magnetic field lines. Right. And once again, since we have force-free conditions, there can be no source terms. The source terms in the energy and angular momentum equations disappear, so we have real conservation of energy and angular momentum. And we have all those simple expressions for the pointing flux and the flux of the angular momentum. You can see that all energy and angular momentum flow along the magnetic field lines, right? And the value of the flux is determined by those two constants, H phi and omega. Right. It turns out that all mechanisms of energy extraction from a black hole can operate only because of the existence of the ergosphere of a black hole. And, this plot shows you where you have ergosphere compared to the event horizon. And this is a formal condition for the ergosphere when we use Boyer-Lindquist or Kirchhoff coordinates. And yes, so basically from this condition, well, what happens that outside of the ergosphere, the time coordinate or the time coordinate is indeed time-like, but inside it becomes space-like. And another important result, another important property of the ergosphere is that inside the ergosphere, everything must rotate around the black hole. All right. So basically, any particle can have angular velocity between some minimum and some maximum value, right? And when it has angular velocity which has exactly this value, it becomes luminal. And if the angular velocity is outside of this range, then it becomes superluminal. Right? And outside of the ergosphere, omega minimum is negative, so you can have rotation both directions. But inside the ergosphere, you can have rotation only in one direction, the same direction as a black hole. And moreover, if the angular velocity of the particle is smaller than some value which is sort of closer to the minimum one compared to the maximum one, then this particle can have negative mechanical energy, which is given by this expression. So what we have here is the resonance energy of the particle and the covariant time component of its four velocity. So within the ergosphere, this ut can be positive, and therefore the energy can be negative. Right? Obviously, well, you can't have this outside of the ergosphere, so such particles do not exist outside of the ergosphere, and then cannot escape from the ergosphere, but can be created only inside the ergosphere. Right. And in 1969, when I was 8 years old, Penrose demonstrated how this fact of existence of the negative energy levels within the black hole ergosphere, energy states within the black hole ergosphere, can be used in order to extract some fraction of the black hole energy, or at least in principle. And the argument goes like this. Well, let's have some particle A, which goes from infinity into the black hole, into the black hole ergosphere, and here decays into particles. And one of the particles, well, just happened to attain negative energy. Okay, and it disappears, goes under the event horizon, disappears into the black hole. And the other one escapes. Because the total energy is conserved, the particle which escapes carries out negative energy higher than the original particle has. Okay, so everybody knows how it works. Okay. But this is not what is important in the Blomfield-Znaik mechanism. In order to explain how it works, at least to try to explain how it works, the best thing is probably to start with a very nice solution found by Wald in 1974. So this solution describes the electromagnetic field which you get when you immerse a rotating black hole into uniform magnetic field. Okay, and well, the angular velocity vector must be aligned with the magnetic field. Well, this kind of symmetry. Okay, and this solution can no longer be described, well, the electromagnetic field can no longer be described as pure magnetic field. Right? In fact, the electric displacement vector is generated near the black hole. And moreover, it has non-vanishing component along the magnetic field. Okay, but why is it important? Well, I just explained that any physical observer, well, at least a fiducial observer who measures electric field, gets the same vector as D. Okay, so D is in fact the electric field as measured by this fiducial observer. Okay, and if you have non-vanishing component of electric field along magnetic field, then this electric field can accelerate particles. Okay, and this conclusion has an absolute meaning because the product of electric and magnetic field is Lorentz invariant. So every observer will make the same conclusion that there is a component of magnetic field along a component of electric field along the magnetic field. And therefore, particle acceleration is possible. So what Blanford and Naik did, they noticed that this is similar to the vacuum solutions for magnetospheres of neutron stars. And they concluded that perhaps from you can get from black holes electromagnetic driven beams in exactly the same fashion as in Goldreich-Julien model. Okay, so once again we have pair creation. Well, the field is very strong, can be very strong in astrophysical applications. All right, so plasma can be created via pair cascades within the magnetosphere, and the currents can flow. Okay, so that was the idea. And in fact, they managed to find a very simple analytical solution for a force-free magnetosphere for the case of a slowly rotating black hole. Okay, so that was a perturbative solution. Right, so once again, what they did, they solved force-free equations. And they assumed that magnetic field had a split manifold configuration. And it turned out that the solution has pure radial field given by this equation. And the magnetic field lines rotate with the angular velocity, which is exactly half of the angular velocity of the black hole. And the H phi, well, depends on the polar angle according to this equation. Right? And once again, well, as you remember, the energy flux and the angular momentum flux are given just by the value of H phi and omega. Okay, and since these source values do not vanish, you have non-vanishing outflow of energy and angular momentum from the black hole. Right. Right, later this mechanism was criticized by Pansley and Karaniti. And from my point of view, the criticism was quite reasonable, right? And I mentioned only 3 points, which I find important. First of all, they argued that a mere fact that there is some electric field in the vacuum solution of the black hole does not guarantee that this field will be able to drive electric currents, because it can be screened. As soon as we introduce plasma, it can be screened, right? That's just a compared with a capacitor, right? Well, that's a capacitor. Between the plates of a capacitor, you have electric field. But it doesn't mean that this electric field can drive stationary currents, steady state currents, right? You introduce plasma between the plates of the capacitor, and charge flows from one plate into another. And as a result, you have no electric field, no currents. All right, the second argument is that Blanford's Naik model lacks proper unipolar induction. And here I want you to show the picture which you already seen this morning for a Faraday disk. Right. And V here is a rotational velocity of the disk. And there is here V cross B force, Lorentz force, right, which drives the electric current across the magnetic field lines and against the electric field. And it is this force which supports the potential difference between the center of the disk and its edge. That is this force which gives you the battery effect. All right, if you come back to the previous plot, all you can see is that electric field, that's the Blanford Naik solution. The electric current flows everywhere along magnetic field lines. And it doesn't cross magnetic field lines anywhere. Okay? So where is the unipolar inductor? And finally, they criticized Blanford and Naik for using the so-called Naik's boundary conditions, which was imposed on the event horizon. And they argued that, well, you can't do that just because the horizon is causally disconnected from the rest of the space. Right? No signal can propagate from the horizon to the outside world. So the use of this boundary condition is incorrect. And the general conclusions were that Blanford's Naik solution is non-physical because it's non-causal, and it's likely to be an unstable steady-state solution. Right? They also concluded that force-free approach is fundamentally fraught, and if you want to develop a proper, is it wrong? Misspelled? Yeah, could be. Yeah, shaky. Yes. Well, I noticed there was something wrong. Okay, but was didn't have time to check it. Okay, so it's not fundamentally wrong. Okay? Okay? So completely incorrect. In the context of this problem. Yes, indeed. And if you want to construct, well, the proper theory for extraction of the rotational rigid black hole, you need to include particle inertia. And they come up with the following simple idea. Okay, if you remember, within the ergosphere, plasma must rotate. Okay, in the same sense as the black hole. And if you have magnetic field, which is frozen into this plasma, that will rotate as well. Okay? That's very easy. Right? We have a rotating medium, just like a rotating accretion disk, or a Faraday disk, or a neutron star. And they come up, when they develop this idea, they come up with the following picture, which I try to show here, that somewhere inside the ergosphere, there must be a region which is particle-dominated region, which anchors the magnetic field lines. Okay? And the electric current flows over the surface of this region. Okay, just like where it flows over the surface of Faraday disk. Okay, so outside of this region, the magnetosphere is magnetically dominated, and the energy is carried away in the form of the Poynting flux. But inside the anchoring region, which is particle dominated, the energy is carried away in the form of the negative mechanical energy of particles, which go towards inside the black hole. So it's some kind of a point, MHD Penrose process. Okay? Right. And now, at last, after this long introduction, which I felt I had to do, right, I proceed and describe the numerical simulation. Well, I start with the numerical simulation of force-free magnetospheres. Right, and what is the main goal of such force-free simulations? My main goal is to check the stability of the Bethe-Zanuck solution. Okay, if Ponsley and Karaniti are right, and the Bethe-Zanuck solution is not stable, then the whole theory of relativistic jets from black holes turns upside down. Okay, so that's the main important question. Right, so I carried out two kinds of simulations. First, I dealt with time-dependent equations of force-free electrodynamics. And then I dealt with this 3 plus 1 Maxwell equations with a generalized Ohm's law. And in both cases, that was two-dimensional axisymmetric simulations. I used Kirchschild coordinates, which allowed me to put the inner boundary inside the event horizon and didn't care about the problem of the Znaik boundary condition. I didn't have to impose such condition. Right? And the initial solution describes the same, has the same poloidal field as in the Bethe-Zanuck solution, but zero electric field, and as a result, zero angular velocity of magnetic field lines. So this is quite far away from the equilibrium of Bethe-Zanuck. And well, in fact, I used some other different setups that they all give me the same outcome. And the outcome can be summarized here. Well, it's summarized here. In time, the solution evolves towards the Bethe-Zanuck solution. And, you've seen this picture already this morning, and a very similar picture. Well, the difference is that there is not a magnetized monopole here, magnetized neutron star, right? There is just a Kerr black hole metric, a Kerr metric for a black hole. Okay, but otherwise the solution looks similar. So we have a wave, right, which propagates away from the black hole, and inside this wave, the solution gradually relaxes to a steady state. Right, and if you compare the steady state solution with the Bethe-Zanuck solution, you find that the agreement is excellent. Okay. So here, the continuous line, well, there is a continuous line here. It gives the Bethe-Zanuck solution, right? But markers show the numerical solutions for three different values of the angular velocity of the black hole. Okay, and you can see that, well, the crosses are very close to this continuous line, and the crosses describe the slowest black hole. And the fact that the agreement here is the best is not surprising, because Benford and Naik, what they did, they found, well, how's it called? Perturbative solution, yeah, sorry, lots of memory. Perturbative solution, right, which works only for slowly rotating black holes. Right, and this plot shows the angular velocity, and as you can see, it's very close to half. In fact, for all values of angular velocity black holes. And the conclusion is that Benford's Naik solution is, in fact, very much stable, and it's an asymptotically stable, or it's an attractor. Right. So now, if the Benford's Naik solution is fine, then what is the origin of the electromotive force in this solution? Right? How does it manage to drive currents if there is no proper unipolar induction? And well, this statement is supposed to explain how. Okay, so let's read it. There are no steady-state axisymmetric solution for the electromagnetic field supported by remote electric currents that simultaneously satisfy both these conditions along the magnetic field lines penetrating the black hole ergosphere. Okay, in order to understand the meaning, well, the importance of this statement, I once again emphasize that D gives you the electric field as measured by the fiducial observer. Okay? That's basically the electric field which can drive current. And if one of these conditions is not satisfied, that what you have unscreened electric field. Either unscreened component along the magnetic field, or very strong component perpendicular to the magnetic field. Okay? Right, so if this is true, then basically, well, that gravitationally induced electric field cannot be screened within the ergosphere by any static distribution of the electric charge. And therefore, this field can drive stationary polarity currents and give us the battery effect. And it's important to emphasize here that it is the ergosphere, not the event horizon, which plays a key role in the mechanism. And I want to give you the proof, because it's very easy. It's very simple. So basically, I start with this, assuming that this condition is satisfied. And then I show that the other condition cannot be satisfied within the ergosphere. Right, so let's see how it goes. So if D dot B is zero, and I use, well, this constitutive equations, and I immediately conclude that E dot B is zero. Right, if you're dealing with a steady state, axisymmetric solutions, then E phi is zero. And once again, I end up with the equation you already seen. Okay? Now, if it's steady state and curl E is zero, and divergence of D is always zero, and I use this expression for the electric field, then I end up with this result, which tells me once again that omega is constant along magnetic field lines. Okay? Right. Now, if far away from the black hole, the electric field is zero, so basically all I have are sources of magnetic field, not electric field. Then omega is zero. But since omega is constant along magnetic field lines, then E is zero everywhere. Okay, now I use this constitutive equation in order to find the expression for D. Okay, and it's given me in terms of B and the shift vector beta and the Laplace function alpha. Okay, now I can find D squared and B squared minus D squared. Good. Which is given by this equation. And, okay, now H phi, which is here, you have non-vanishing H phi only if you have non-vanishing current. Okay, now let's suppose that there are no poloidal currents in the magnetosphere. So I really deal with static distribution of electric charge. Okay, no poloidal currents. Then H phi is zero, and I have this expression. Now within the ergosphere, beta squared minus alpha squared is positive, and it means that B squared minus D squared must be negative. Okay, so indeed, this gravitation-induced electric field cannot be screened by any static distribution of electric charge. Okay, And if this conclusion is correct, then the energy can be extracted even along the magnetic field lines, which do not penetrate the horizon. It's just sufficient to penetrate the sphere of a black hole. OK, so let's check it and let's do the problem, the bulk problem. We have uniform at infinity magnetic field, right? But now, in the plasma case. OK? And so I dealt here in this simulation sphere. I solved the equations of electrodynamics sphere with generalized Ohm's law, which was based on radiative resistivity due to inverse quantum scattering of background photons. And the results are shown here. And you can see, well, this is the event horizon. And this is the ergosphere, right? And the plot shows the distribution of the angular velocity of magnetic field lines. And you can see that all magnetic field lines which penetrate the ergosphere participate in the rotation in the same sense as black hole. But the magnetic field lines which do not enter the ergosphere do not rotate. OK? Right. Now, I have non-vanishing omega. I have non-vanishing H phi, in fact, along these field lines. And there is a energy outflow along these field lines. So where does this energy come from? Well, in fact, it comes from this region, where we have, I have an equatorial current sheet. OK, so it's just one of the tricks of general relativity, where things turn, very surprising. OK? So for any local fiducial observer, this current sheet is the place where electromagnetic energy dissipates. OK? But when we are talking about extraction of energy from the black hole, the flow of energy, we are talking about this energy at infinity. Right? This conserved quantity. And it's a different quantity. And for this quantity, the current sheet works as a source of energy. Now, the photons, which are supposed to be scattered and radiated within this current sheet, are not included in the simulations. But the model basically implies that this current sheet radiates negative energy photons, which are then, swallowed by the black hole. They cannot escape, right, because they have negative energy. So they can only dive into the black hole and die there. OK, and in fact, this is very much similar to what Pansley and Karaniti suggested in their paper. OK, now let's jump to, I have 5 minutes for MHD simulations. OK, well, a number of groups have carried out MHD simulations of magnetically dominated magnetospheres. But I have time only to describe my simulations and simulations by Koiden. OK, so what would be the key questions for MHD simulations of magnetically dominated magnetospheres? Well, as far as this problem of extraction of rotational energy is concerned. Well, the main questions are, will the inertial effects lead to strong deviations from the force-free result? Or, if you put it the other way, will particle eliminated regions develop in the black hole ergospheres? And now, let's come back to this picture. It shows the model of Pansley and Karaniti. All right, so here there is a particle dominated region. Okay? And in fact, here there is a region where you have negative, the particles have negative mechanical energy. And it's an influx of particles with negative energy, which provides the outflow of energy from the black hole. All right, so it will be interesting to check whether, when we do MHD models of black hole magnetospheres, the regions of negative mechanical energy indeed develop, and whether the corresponding flux of energy becomes significant. OK, so here is a MHD simulations of monopole magnetospheres. And the continuous line shows the force-free solution, and the marked shows the MHD solution. And what's shown here is the H phi component of the magnetic field. And here is the angular velocity of the black hole, which is close to half, right? OK, like it should be in force-free. And here, as you can see, there is not much difference between MHD solution and the post-free solution. And this plot shows the distribution of the time component, covariant time component for velocity of particles at the event horizon. And you can see that everywhere it's negative. And when it's negative, the energy at infinity is positive. So in fact, there is no influx of negative energy particles through the event horizon. Okay, so we conclude that inertial effects do not become significant in the ergosphere. Particles do not attain negative mechanical energy. And phosphere approximation of Blum von Zweig is perfectly fine. But simulations, MHD simulations of Koidar and collaborators for a problem, for MHD version of the Wald problem, where you have uniform at infinity magnetic field, deliver a different result. And the key result is shown on this picture. Here, what is shown is the distribution of the energy at infinity. And you can see that within the ergosphere, there is a region of negative energy at infinity. Okay? And in fact, they calculated the flux of electromagnetic energy for the event horizon and the flux of hydrodynamic energy or mechanical energy for the event horizon. And they found that these fluxes are comparable. Right, so it looks like, well, they found a new version different from, in fact, Pansen and Kernighy version of MHD Penrose process. Unfortunately, the simulations were terminated quite early, after only one period of the black hole for some technical reason. So the relevant question here is whether this just a transient phenomenon. Well, such regions will be found in steady state. So I carried out similar simulations, and my solution looked very much similar to the solution of Koidar and collaborators. So initially, there is indeed a region within the black hole ergosphere where UT is positive, and therefore the energy at infinity, the mechanical energy at infinity of particles is negative. Okay. However, later the solution evolves to a steady state, which has completely different structure. Okay, so magnetic field within the ergosphere develops a split monopole configuration, right? And the region of positive UT completely disappears. So everywhere UT is negative, and therefore the energy infinity is positive. Okay, so in this steady state, the MHD Penrose mechanism does no longer operate. But the Blum von Zweig mechanism, in fact, continues to operate. Okay, so energy is still extracted from the black hole electromagnetically in the form of the Poynting plot. And okay, so 1 minute left. Well, how did I manage that? Okay, conclusions. Well, first of all, the Blum von Zweig solution is an asymptotically stable, steady-state solution, which is perfectly causal and physical. So there's no problem with the Blum von Zweig solution. And this is confirmed both by the force-free and the full MHD simulations. Okay? Now, in the Blum von Zweig mechanism, the potential drop of the black hole battery is induced gravitationally when its ergosphere is threaded by the lines of external magnetic field. So sorry, I'm just reading the conclusions. Right? And it's pure general relativistic effect, which is specific to the property of space-time within the ergosphere. And it's not caused by the inertial frame dragging effect, in the sense that the rotation of magnetospheric plasma within the ergosphere is not important. It's not a key factor. Right? And it's very robust. So in all the simulations, there is some finite, in all the simulations I carried out, there is some finite electromagnetic flux from the black hole. Okay, due to this mechanism. Right. Well, what's about Pansley and Kernighy model? Well, contrary to this theory, numerical simulations show no evidence for development of particle-dominated anchoring regions within the black hole ergospheres. Right? However, the simulations have also indicated the feasibility of mixed processes, where production of massive or massless particles of negative mechanical energy facilitates magnetic extraction and rotation energy of black holes. So here, what I have in mind is the simulations of Koidar and collaborators, which show that at least in transient phases, okay, the transport, the influx of negative energy particles through the event horizon can be important. Okay, and I also have in mind, well, my simulations, electrodynamic simulations, which discount the current sheet in the black hole ergosphere. Okay, and the energy here is transformed, well, is transported with the help of the photons, negative energy photons emitted in the current sheet. That's it. Well, what's the inertial frame dragging effect? So basically, any inertial frame will be dragged into rotation around the black hole.
Right.
Okay, so how do you translate it in terms of the well, dynamics of the black hole magnetosphere? So plasma, right? Well, particles of the plasma, which are inside the event horizon, have to rotate. Okay, so if Pansley and Karaniti were right, that would be exactly the reason for unipolar induction. That would exactly what would give you electric drive electric currents and give you the difference, the potential difference between pole and the equator. Okay, this is not the case. You don't need particles to rotate. Okay, if you consider just the vacuum case where there are no particles, right? Just the electromagnetic field. Okay, you already have generated electric field. Well, what else? What else can you associate with an inertial frame? An inertial frame can only be associated with some material object.
Well, it sounds like there was some frame transformation that made out of magnetic field and not electric field.
Well, that's not just the frame transformation. That's more than that.
What was it?
Well, that's a good question. I wonder how can I explain to you? Because, well, there is no anything similar in non-relativistic physics. Okay? For example, let me explain you. Okay, you have a magnetic field, pure magnetic field, right? Then you do the Lorentz boost across the magnetic field. And you end up with the electric field, right? But E dot B will be exactly zero. Okay? This is not the case. Of the Wahl solution. In the Wahl solution, E dot B is not zero. So, this is one of these cases where you have. No, I don't think so. I can't see it. Yeah, it's one of these cases. I think this is one of these cases. Much like what's the spin of the electron? Okay? Same question. Maybe not. Well, you can find the phrase in the paper where they describe the mechanism as sort of Penrose process, where particles under event horizon interact with the particles outside of the event horizon by means of magnetic field. But this is not a very good explanation, isn't it? Well, I don't think it's a good analogy, because when you say you need to rotate magnetic field lines, what do you have in mind? You have in mind MHD analogy, right? You have plasma,
yeah,
which rotates.
Okay. Well,
in this case, still, I don't see if inertia of plasma is not important, if it's completely excluded from the equations, you can't really use this analogy again.
Like velocity
Because it's not the plasma which forces the magnetic field to rotate.
It doesn't matter. I can define the field line. If I can define the velocity of the field, the velocity of the field line, as long as I have a well-defined...
Of course, you can define it. But what you find as a result is the velocity which magnetic field imposes on particles, not the other way around.
Okay, but if,
so let's imagine that matter comes from accretion disk, and accretion disk has a lot of azimuthal component. What would be the expected result that of magnetosphere at radius a bit larger than ergospheric radius? So, because the magnetic field lines are kind of connected with four regions of magnetic disk, accretion disk, and the inner region of matter with magnetic field accreted to the black hole. And what is expected solution in this case at radius larger than ergosphere radius?
Well, that's a good question. And you can think of, once again now, of inertial frame directly. Right? So when you're dealing with plasma, well, this accretion disk, well, so within the ergosphere, sort of rotation that they call is imposed on the disk. So that's like the additional source for rotational energy, right? But on the other hand, in this problem, you have to do the energy balance. Well, when I have the accretion disk, I might accrete into the black hole as well, right? And then carries inside the positive energy. Okay, so energy, some energy is instructed, but some energy is swallowed by the black hole. So what is the total result? Right, and as we know from numerical simulations, the total result may well be no extraction of energy from the black hole. Okay? So it's very dangerous to have really matter-dominated plasma in black hole magnetosphere. You can end up with not extracting any energy from the black hole.
If
particle dominated. If it's not anchored to the disk, then it's all right, I suppose, you can extract energy. But if it's anchored to the disk, then the net effect, I think, would still be the increase of the energy to the black hole. So it will be, there will be no net extraction of the energy.
Well, let me ask, because I know you're going to have a hard time answering. What the dependence of the result is on the dissipation, again, in your walled problem, where you have the MHD walled problem,
yes,
where
yes,
you
yes.
have a Y point, which is located outside the boundary yes. of the ergosphere.
Yeah.
And then it looked like you had plasmons inside the current sheet.
Well, that's the problem, right? I understand it. So that's the MHD solution. So we have split monopole field. Split like monopole, like split monopole configuration. You see? Well, there is some reconnection going on here, but that's a minor thing. And if I come back to this, to this electrodynamic simulation, that the structure magnetic field is completely different, right? That's not split monopole. The magnetic field line crosses the equatorial plane, right? And then goes away. It doesn't dive into the black hole. And so what's the difference? What difference is that here I have some model for resistivity, right? Which is not numerical resistivity. That's one thing. And I don't have particle inertia. I don't have particle pressure. So I have two completely different results for the same problem when I use two different frameworks. Here, yes. Yes, just like I'm saying here. So here, phase phosphory breaks down. But since I don't solve phosphory equations here, I solve just the equations of electrodynamics with some generalized Ohm law. This is not a problem. This is not a problem as far as mathematics is concerned. But you are right in the sense that the solution very much depends on what you use what kind of physical input you make in simulation.
I still want to come back to this issue, as already mentioned, that how do we see the transition from our case where the disk only produces a magnetic field that you use to extract energy in this way, to a case where the accretion is actually important? Suppose you had lots of accretion going on, lots of junk around the rotating black hole. Is there anything in this calculation that you could use to calculate how much angular momentum extraction from the hole you would get in that case? Or is it completely a different case?
I'm just trying to understand what you mean.
Can you carry out
numerical simulations which will address this question? Well, suppose I can, but in the future.
Well, sure.
But of course, that's not what I've done.
So, in other words, is your intuition good enough to tell us whether something interesting will happen? But you can estimate what the numerical simulations will tell us in that case. Or if this is a completely different situation.
So once again, just describe what you have. So we have an accretion disk, lots of matter around.
Everywhere.
Well, if it's a lot of matter of everywhere, what do you have predominantly? Accretion.
Yeah.
Right?
At the same time, you're rotating black hole.
Yeah, so what you can have an outgoing, well, in some cases, you can have an outgoing pointing flux, but it will be small. So the net energy flux.
Why do you think it will be small?
Well, in order to have it dominating, you need to have magnetically dominated magnetosphere.
Well, okay. Suppose we keep the magnetic field fixed, and we just increase the mass loading.
Yeah. So you end up with the case.
Momentum loss will probably go.
You end up with the case where there will be no energy extraction.
In other words, if I increase the mass.
No net energy.
If I increase the mass loading with the same magnetic field, then the energy extraction will go down, is your estimate?
Yes.
It will be terminated
at some point.
What was the reason for that again?
Well, just once again. Well, it will be dominated by the influx of positive energy particles into the black hole. Okay, so we have two components in the energy flux, particles, which accrete into the black hole and carry into the black hole its energy, and the pointing flux, right, which carries energy away from the black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And the first component will be larger than the second. So we really need to have magnetically dominated.
Surprising.
Yes. If you. Yes. Well, I couldn't say that. Well, the result can be a lot of magnitude different. Okay. But it's about this. It's about this value. Yeah. Well, this can be easily tested. This can be easily tested, and I will prove you wrong.
John.
Well, let's define terms here. I'm a little confused about some terminology. When you say energy extraction, you mean that the energy coming out is such that the mass of the hole is being reduced.
Sorry?
Let's define energy extraction.
Well, energy extraction. Well, let's calculate the total energy flux, say, through the event horizon.
Right.
For example. Is it positive or negative?
Right.
So, is the energy flows out or flows in? If it flows out,
the mass of the black hole
positive,
is being reduced.
Then it's energy extraction. Otherwise, it's not.
Okay.
Okay?
You're right.
Of course, we are talking about the rotational energy only.
No. Okay. So that one should, as a practical matter, one can also distinguish the case where the black hole is contributing energy to an accretion situation above and beyond simply what you're extracting in the disk itself.
Yeah, well, I understand what you're saying. Well, the point is that it's not easy to separate where one effect ends and the other effect starts. Okay? Your accretion disk exists not by itself, right? It exists within the Kerr metric. Okay, so obviously
yes.
This Kerr metric has an effect on the disk dynamics.
Yes.
And has an effect on the energy extraction.
Yes.
Along the magnetic field lights which penetrate the disk.
Yeah.
Okay.
The magnetic field can penetrate the disk.
I don't really know how to separate, how to split these two effects. The only easy way is just to calculate the net flux. The net
yes.
energy flux. This I can do. Everybody can.
Yeah, okay, so what's our point? What's the point? I mean,
what's the point? Whether we need to extract energy from the black hole or not?
Right. The efficiency.
Yeah. Let me.
Yeah. I think.
Question is increased relative to what starting point?
Right. When I'm talking about mass loading in astrophysical context, what do we have? What do we have in mind? So let's say that here is a black hole, and here is accretion disk, and here is some magnetosphere above the black hole. When you say you increase mass loading, what do you mean? Do you mean that you increase the accretion rate? Or you increase B squared over here in the magnetosphere? Here or there? What do you have in mind? I can tell you that if this is, say, less or much less than 1, then there will be no energy extraction even along these field lines. Okay? If it's not, if it's the other way around, energy will be extracted along these field lines. Okay? But as far as the accretion disk is concerned, there will be an influx of energy for the event horizon along the accretion disk. Okay? So if you take into account the energy transported by the accretion disk, the net effect can be not extraction of the energy of black hole.
I was just gonna make a quick comment, which I think is that the field on the whole has to be related to the accretion rate in practical terms. I mean, you know, some of the field is getting onto the hole, and ultimately, one way or another, it's going to be related. The field strength on the whole is probably related to the accretion rate, so it just goes in the direction of arguing that at least that part of the pointing flux extraction would depend on the accretion rate. In other words, the B squared that would enter from the hole probably depends on the accretion rate. That's all.
Well,
because
the only point is how much flux can we have, how much magnetic flux, how strong magnetic field is the black hole, and this can depend on the accretion rate. That's right.
Okay, I'm gonna have to cut this one very quick.
Along the axis, the extraction of energy is impossible because you cannot extract pure mass without extracting angular momentum from the black hole because of thermodynamics.
No, along the axis, of course, it's zero, but above the axis, it's not. It doesn't have to be exactly on the axis.
We're going to have to finish this. Let's thank Sergei once again. The